The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Why don't you pull up a chair and sit a while?
Because the wizard's fixing to learn you a thing or two, if you can stand it.
And it wouldn't hurt you none, neither. The fact is, some folks say Eric wouldn't know whether to scratch his watch or wind his buttocks.
Won't say who, but they said it anyhow. You darn tootin' they did.
You'll come back now, you hear?
Here's America's sweetheart himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to Hour 2 of the Eric Metaxas Show. We call it Hour 2 because legally we're obliged to. I believe it comes usually after Hour 1, but then, you know, Hour 1 will come after Hour 2 eventually. It's cycling. We want you to go to our app, the Eric Metaxas Show app on your phone, and you can just listen to this over and over and over again, and the hours will blur together. I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson, who's in his boyhood home, is it, Dr. Hanson?
Yes.
In rural California, not so far from Fresno. We've been talking about China. We've been talking about the Democrats. It seems to me that the existential crisis we faced in 1775 and 6, the existential crisis we faced in 1860, has never again repeated itself until now. That right now, with China and with people among our cultural elites who are buying the Chinese narrative, who themselves understand nothing of our history of liberty, of self-government, of the role of virtue in self-government, that we are right now in our culture and in our nation facing an existential crisis that compares to the previous two. Do you think I'm overstating it?
No, I was a young kid during the 60s, and that was pretty divisive and maybe more violent, but it wasn't geographical and political. That happened in the Civil War, and I'm afraid it's happening now, where when we look at maps, we not only see political differences by county, but we see geographical districts. We basically have a country of the east and west corridors, coastal corridors, and then around the Great Lakes. And then we have a Red Sea, much larger geographical area in between, but population-wise, they're about equal. And when you take that multiplier, you get something like the Balkans. And that's what I'm worried about, because you say half of almost all the deaths have been in New York City. Florida, California, or much less Utah, they're not experiencing the same thing. So when a New Yorker, or like Bette Midler, says, you people on the Florida beaches are going to be tan for your funeral, or you start to see that level of invective, or Madonna on the day that Trump was inaugurated blow up the White House, or all of that talk, and then it's enhanced in our age, unlike the 60s, with social media, internet, email. We've got a perfect storm, and globalization played a big role. Anybody whose muscular labor could be Xeroxed abroad was, and people who had so-called informational skills, legal, insurance, finance, academic, media, technological, computer, they suddenly had a market not of 330 million, but 7 billion, and they became fabulously wealthy, and they somehow attributed that to their superior virtue. And the people who didn't do well, well, they were people in pickup trucks that took meth and drove businesses away, so-called. So, yeah, I'm worried about it, and it's crossing when I go to New York or when I go to San Francisco, I feel like I'm in a different planet now. And I have friends of long standing that I can't talk to anymore. But I will say this, Eric, I know it sounds self-serving, but I do think the venom comes from the left in this sense, that they are totalitarians. They see all of their existence encompassed by a political ideology, where conservatives or moderates say, you know what, this is politics, but this is life, this is culture, this is economics, and they don't hold grudges, and they're not always in your face the way the left is. For them, it's 24/7, 360 degrees, and that's scary.
Well, I think you of all people understand it's because the right, for all our flaws, hold to a Judeo-Christian Western ethic. We believe in truth. We believe to some extent also in forgiveness. If you're part of a totalitarian cult, those things mean nothing to you. Power is everything. And it seems to me that since the 60s, because we've not been educating a couple of generations now of students in what it means to be an American and where we get our values from, that we do have people on the other side who for whom this is all scorched earth policy. They don't believe in malice toward none.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you don't believe in transcendence in the Judeo-Christian ethic and morality, and you believe that all there is here, and then you die and there's nothing, then you want to be God on earth. And you feel that you have to, in a very brief time, have this power to coerce people to be good, and that you can change human nature. It's not innately flawed and redeemed only by religion and culture, but it's malleable. And with more money and education and goodwill, you can force people to be good, and that's all we are. And that's a very different view, because you really have to make your own, everybody has a desire for something outside of themselves. So their gods tend to be material gods, global warming, abortion, all of these issues that they embrace with a frenzy. It's, I don't believe when I die, I'm going to rot. So I have to have a legacy among humans, and I've got to get this perfect world. And you're in the way, and you're stupid. You're not educated. You didn't go to Yale, or you didn't do this. And I'm going to force you to be good. And for the other side, it's, this isn't all there is. And more importantly, how you live your life in an ethical and spiritual and moral sense depends on your ultimate fate of your soul. And you seek, you have a little humility about that, and you understand you were born into this world as a flawed human being, and culture and especially religion allow you to be redeemed. And no matter what you say, human nature is innate and it's fixed. And that's, and so we look to things like Sermon on the Mount rather than an inconvenient truth. And that makes a big difference in the way people treat each other.
Has anyone ever compared Al Gore to Jesus before? I think you may be the first, and I hope you're the last. Let me ask you a question. When you talk about, you know, this idea that I brought up, you know, that if I don't fear death because I believe in something beyond death, I believe that virtue is rewarded, I'm not so worried about getting it all now. Then I can behave and say things like, I can behave like a Patrick Henry and say things like, give me liberty or give me death, because genuinely I'm willing to risk, because I have foundational values. But if I don't really believe in any of those things, then I am risk averse. And it strikes me that that's when you have the nanny state, when you have big government, what they want to say is just do what I tell you. I will give you food. I will give you shelter. I will give you some kind of modicum of safety. We as capitalists understand that risk ought to be rewarded. That's the world we live in. And that, you know, if you want to build the Brooklyn Bridge, some people will die. If you want to fight a satanic enemy, whether it's the tyranny of George III or anyone else, you're going to lose lives. It seems to me that the game they're playing right now is they have such a soft population that we've had pretty much good times since World War II, and that people really have lost the ability to face death and will oftentimes, at least 50%, do what the government tells them to avoid any of these horrors or any of these risks.
Yeah, I think so. And that's the religious side, the contribution of Jerusalem to Western culture. But remember, it also, what was unique about the West, it incorporated Athens and Rome. And by that, I mean, there was a pre-existing tragic view, not a therapeutic view of human nature, that we were, as the Greeks said, ephemeral. We only live epihemeros. We were only here for a day. And so human nature was to be expected. It was charted. It was known. And the great beauty of life was you struggled against a very finite time of life, and you understood the evil within you. This is pre-Christian even.
Forgive me, we're going to have to come right back to this. The subject, folks, in case you're just tuning in, is what does Athens have to do with Jerusalem? My guest is Victor Davis Hanson. We'll be right back.
Oh, rolling and riding and slipping and sliding, it's magic. And you.
Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. I have to ask you to continue, VDH, if I can call you that. You were just talking about what Athens has to do with Jerusalem. And I think this is what we have forgotten. This is what the globalist cultural elites not only have forgotten, but are actively now working against, some of them wittingly, some unwittingly. Isn't this the central issue, that these are the values of the West without which we do become China?
Yeah, I think so. I think somebody understands the West looks at this coronavirus and they say, maybe in February, human nature being what it is, you better watch out because hoarding is going to inevitably happen. And then we're going to get panic and hysteria and then blame gaming, just as it happened in Athens or Constantinople or Genoa during the 14th century, because that's humans. And so we're going to try to mitigate that and deal with it rather than, oh my gosh, that person should die because they went to the beach when they weren't supposed to, and they weren't learned and they weren't educated. So it's a humility that Christianity built upon and then changed into a much richer texture. But the reason that Plato and Aristotle were so popular in the medieval church is the church philosophers found things there that could be incorporated into the Christian doctrine. And when you don't study this or you don't know it, and we used to have a society, not just in college, but even in grade school, understand the principles of Western culture, then you end up where we're going now. And where we're going now explains why people have an affinity for China, because they say, whether you're Tom Friedman, you say, come back from China, and you say, I think, as I remember, he wrote, I wish we could be China for a day. What he meant was, if we had the power, we could have solar panels and high-speed rail and gleaming airports, and I'm so embarrassed of Kennedy. You know, I felt like saying, when I go to JFK, I might be embarrassed of the infrastructure, but there's a human diversity that you don't see in monoculture racist China, in a gleaming Beijing airport. But there was a fascination with China because they felt that it had the coercive power to achieve things, just like the left kind of now likes the military. They think, wow, transgenderism, women in combat, we can't get that through legislative process if people are too stupid to support it. That military can do it by edict. That's why this period is so scary, because these governors now can override the First and Second Amendments and do things they've always wanted to, but they never had the opportunity to.
Don't you think there's going to be some kind of a kickback? Greg Gutfeld the other night was just brilliantly saying that what you said early in this conversation, that the American people are going to do what they're going to do. In other words, if they feel that it's safe, they're going to get back into the water. If they don't, they won't. But I think you're seeing in a lot of these protests and in just the reportage about, you know, parents being arrested for playing ball with their kid in a park in the middle of nowhere, I think that there's going to be a kickback and that people are eventually just going to do what they want to do. And there's so many of us, there's not enough law enforcement, you know, to keep us from doing certain things. I think that spirit is still alive in America, and that there will be pushback, you know, probably starting about today.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it also is a cultural economic divide, in the sense that if you're somebody who made a lot of money very early, or you're somebody who feels that the recession-depression won't affect your foundation or your university or your network or your media outlet or your computer company, and you've had a pretty good life and you're not physical, you haven't been around people that are poor except your gardener and your housekeeper, then you don't really have a lot of empathy. But if somebody has gone broke or been injured on the job or has to go out at 55 and wait tables all day or is a frontline nurse, for them, the human experience has always been on the margins. So when they look at this, they feel, you know what, this is not that much different than a daily life. It's a struggle. But if you're somebody who feels, I follow all my health regimens, I got all my 401ks, I got my great job, I do not want to take 99.9, even though they tell me it's 99.9 chance, I could die. I have one chance in 1,000 of dying. That's not fair to me because I have a great life. Well, the other people said, I'm not afraid of death for the reasons we prior discussed, but more importantly, for me right now, I consider my restaurant going broke or my barbershop going broke as a destruction of everything I built, everything I was going to leave my children, my name in the community, the help that I give other people, and I'm not going to do it, even if it costs me, it takes some chances. And that's the difference, I think.
I think it's time, or we're getting very close to the time, for, you know, a Boston Tea Party. It seems to me that when tyranny goes too far, if you have people, as we still have, by God's grace, in the United States of America, there will be pushback. If I owned a barbershop here in Manhattan where I live, I think I would open it up and I would happily be arrested to set an example for my fellow New Yorkers. And I think if enough people have that attitude, there's nothing that the governor or mayor, frankly, can do at this point.
Not if there's enough people. I think if I had a barbershop, I would tell people, these are the odds that you could be infected. Here's masks on the table. You're welcome right. to use them. Here's hand sanitizers. I would be very clean, but I said, I'm going to take a risk because you need to get your hair cut for, if anything, public health. We don't want a lice outbreak all over New York.
Right.
And I'm going to go, because we had a sophisticated, successful civilization, and we're not going to destroy it. When people say, we're not going to go back to normal, what was normal? Normal was pretty good for most people. At least it was fair and it was transparent. And when they say we're not going to go back to normal, I don't want to have the new abnormal, because I have a feeling based on history, I know what they have in mind as the new normal, and I consider it abnormal.
Just a few minutes left. So the question then is, you said, you know, that if the economy tanks, Trump will look like Hoover. Here's the difference. Trump is not Hoover. He's Trump. And I think that even if he's cast as Hoover, Trump cast as Hoover still doesn't look like Hoover. I think that he will be reelected. I think we will probably get the House back. And I think he is going to be a wartime president in a sense, because whatever kind of war we have with China, the war is on. He decided, you know, to rouse the dragon by confronting them economically a couple of years ago already. I have to say that I'm pretty sanguine about our future. Maybe we're in a battle, but we've been in battles before.
Yeah, when I mentioned Hoover, I said that was what they were going to try to portray him. Sure. I think he has a good chance, but the reason people voted for Trump were for two reasons. One, they believed his agenda was a better type of conservatism because of things like China and the border and deregulation and all of that, that they felt the Republican Bush establishment was not concerned about average people's jobs. Okay, we got that. But they also didn't want to play by the Marcus of Queensbury rules anymore. They thought that Mitt Romney or John McCain were decent gentlemen that preferred losing nobly to winning kind of fiercely. And they wanted somebody to say, you know what, the next time that SOB attacks me or my supporters, I'm going to retaliate. And Trump, if you actually look at his most controversial tweets and statements, I went through them all, about 100 of them. They were never preemptive. They were retaliatory. Now, they may have been disproportionate, megatonnage for a modest, but he was trying to restore deterrence. And I think people now realize if you don't attack Donald Trump or you criticize him in a polite way, you have no problem. But if you demagogue him and libel him or supporters, he doesn't care. He will retaliate in a way that you've never seen and you'd feel is not customary. And that's why people hate him so much, because he's not playing by the George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush Republican rules. And they think he should, because they were very effective. One final thought. We being the Republican or conservative movement, didn't win 51% since 1988. Michael Dukakis was defeated by George H.W. Bush. I think we've lost 5 out of the last 6 popular elections, the popular vote. And this was at a time when the Republican Party won 1,100 local races under Obama and state races. So what I'm getting at is county, state, conservatives were making huge processes, new agendas, and were winning at the national ticket. The establishment was fielding candidates like John McCain and Romney that were not able to capture the imagination of the American people. And so Trump came along. He didn't get 51%, but he did the unthinkable. He was outspent 4-1. He had a negative, completely negative media, and he had the most influential elements of the Republican Party against him, and he won.
Is that right? Yeah. I have to laugh because it would just be so much fun to keep talking to you. I'd love to talk to you about the Mycenaeans and the Greeks next time. I do hope you can join us again soon. I'm glad to know you're out there, particularly glad to know you're with us today. My audience gets to hear from you. God bless you, and we'll talk to you soon. Oh, and do not forget to see No Safe Spaces. Fantastic movie, nosafespaces.com. You got to go there, nosafespaces.com, and use the code SAVE25.
Hey, folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss, like, playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a 3-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Heroes and role models have always been tremendously important to me. In my new book, 7 More Men, I tell the uplifting and inspiring stories of Martin Luther, George Whitefield, William Booth, George Washington Carver, Sergeant Alvin York, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Billy Graham. Each of these men had the courage to surrender themselves to a higher purpose for the sake of others. Become acquainted with these 7 incredible heroes and your life will be immeasurably richer. Order your copy of 7 More Men today. For more info, go to my website, EricMetaxas.com.
Hey there, folks, it's Eric Metaxas Show. I would much rather listen to the Eagles than talk to Dennis Prager. But you know what? I don't get a choice in this matter. I have to talk to Dennis Prager. It's in my contract. Dennis Prager, welcome.
That was a beautiful introduction.
Oh, my gosh. There's actually very little I'd like to do more than talk to Dennis Prager. You, my friend, are on this program to talk about a film called No Safe Spaces, a documentary. It came out this past weekend. I saw it. It is spectacular. It's better than spectacular. It is vitally important. So tell me, did it do well this past weekend?
Well, in fact, it was the highest grossing one theater opening in American history for a documentary, but it missed by $200, beating Sicko by Michael Moore.
You're not joking.
That's how.
You're not joking. $200?
$200. Yeah, as I said, had I known, I would have paid the $200.
All right, this weekend, we need to break this record, Dennis.
Well, it's very. The truth is, you're right. The truth is, and I'm not saying it because I'm in it, I have a line I use, which is totally sincere. It is not great because I'm in it. And I'm not Mr. Humble. I'm Mr. Real. I am in a great film, but it is not great because I'm in it.
No, that's absolutely true. I've seen you on camera, and it doesn't get worse than you. Dennis Prager, there's a reason you're in radio. Let me just put it that way. People like to joke, but you know I'm your friend. I would not lie. You made a film with Adam Carolla called No Safe Spaces. I want my audience to hear about this. I saw the whole thing. It is spectacular. It is vitally important for America.
Yeah.
Please tell my audience.
Right. Look, people should see it because it's a great film. But people have a moral obligation to see it, if I'm allowed to say such a thing. Because if we don't support non-left-wing films, then we can't start complaining, oh, Hollywood only puts out left-wing stuff.
Well, I've said that a million times, and I feel that so strongly. It's why I wanted to have you on this program. I mean, I would have you on this program, you know, 20 times to talk about this, because there are certain things that must succeed. If people complain and complain about what's happening in America, and then they don't take the trouble to see this film or tell their friends to see this film, then I want to say to them, you can't complain, because these people made a great film. I've seen it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Honestly, Dennis,
look,
it is absolutely wonderful.
I've seen it four times.
You've seen it four times. does your performance improve with each watching?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good. You're way too hard on yourself. No joke. This film is about one of the most important things of our time, if not the most important things, because it's about liberty. But tell why
it's... You know what?
Yeah, go.
You know what? Let me tell your audience something, okay? As painful as it is, I'm going to tell them. You are one of the few who understands what's happening in America. And I say it as praise of you, but I say it with great sadness that the word few had to precede it. That Americans are not aware of the greatest threat to free speech in the history of America. It is almost astonishing to me. How could people be oblivious? So this film is a wake-up call. It shows what is happening, particularly on our campuses.
I'm glad you think that I'm one of the few people who really understands this. Unfortunately, I agree with you in the sense that I am trying in my own way to get word out about this. The film really and truly is very entertaining and very important. The only thing I missed in the film was my own performance. I should have been in the film. I could have played you in the film, and I would have done at least as good a job. But that's not – look, we're not here – to praise me any more than I've already been praised. Thank you very much. But I got to tell you, seriously, the subject of the film, I want my audience to understand, if they go to this, what are they going to see? Because I think they should, every young person in America must see this film. Your parents, who pay for your school and your clothes and everything, they can force you to see this film, and they should.
That's right. And the parents need to know, obviously, what they're paying their hard-earned money for. Why Americans are in $1 trillion of debt for the right not to speak. It's almost unbelievable, actually. What people will see, and people, I said non-left, because we have a lot of liberals in the film who speak about the horrors of what the left is doing. This is my goal, aside from the film. This is not the film's, the film is not really that particularly political. The film is about an emergency in America, entertainingly and urgently given. But my goal, one of my biggest goals, is to have liberals understand what Professor Alan Dershowitz says in the film to me in his apartment in Manhattan. And I am close to quoting, but it's a paraphrase. Dennis, as a liberal, as a Hillary Clinton supporter, as a Democrat, as an American, and as a Jew, I fear the left far more than the right.
When I heard him say that in the film, you know, I was stunned to hear him say that, because there are people who are Democrats who see this as clearly as we do, and he is one of them. We're going to go to a break. We're going to come back with Dennis Prager. Folks, the film is No Safe Spaces, and you know... these things are vital. Please, please. If you can afford it.
NoSafeSpaces.com.
NoSafeSpaces.com will tell you everything you need to know. NoSafeSpaces.com. Please see it this weekend. We'll be right back.
Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash. From my laboratory in the castle east. The master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did
hey
the
there, folks.
Mash.
That's the monster mash. Bobby Boris Pickett. And the Crypt Kicker 5. It doesn't get better than that.
No, it
literally,
doesn't.
It's the only Halloween song worth listening to. Maybe the theme song from the Munsters. We're talking to a friend of mine, Dennis Prager, about a film that almost broke an all-time record, but for $200, which should all make us all feel deeply ashamed that Michael Moore still has the number one spot. It's called No Safe Spaces. Dennis Prager, tell my audience, if you would, what this film gets into in some details, because between the joking, I don't know if we covered that.
The film is essentially about the assault on free speech that is unprecedented, literally unprecedented in American history. As many of your listeners probably know, there was a recent poll. 50% of Americans believe the First Amendment should be changed, should be amended to say essentially, yes, there's free speech except for hate speech, which of course means there's no free speech. That's the end of free speech definitionally. The name No Safe Spaces comes from the existence of safe spaces on most American campuses. I have actually seen such places. There, that is the place you go to if a conservative speaker comes to your university and you cannot handle it emotionally.
Do they have
so
like
go there? You,
yeah, but I mean, when we talk about safe spaces, I always think of it as metaphorical. You're telling me there are literal places called safe spaces?
Yes.
Are they like root cellars? Do they have like Slim Jims and water purification tablets? What is going on down there?
Padded walls?
Not, you're not far. You are given hot chocolate. You are given Play-Doh to play with.
All right, this is not a joke. Dennis, we joke around so much, people aren't going to believe you. You're being deadly serious right now that undergraduates are given hot chocolate and Play-Doh.
As a religious man who believes in the divinity of the Bible, I give you my word, there are physical places. I'm not done. You're given hot chocolate, Play-Doh. You are given stuffed animals to hold and watch frolicking kittens on a video.
Frolicking kittens, you say?
And then when the conservative speaker leaves campus, you feel free to leave your safe space.
This is the infantilization.
That is exactly
of
what it is.
Young men and women.
The only difference between kindergarten and college is the age of the kinder.
People who understand German or Yiddish understand that kinder means children. I have to tell you, Dennis, this is, you know, when you said that there's an assault on free speech, it's unprecedented. There's no question that that is true, which is why it is very hard for young people to process, because they think that this is normal. They don't understand that this is madness. And I think anytime there's hysteria in history, when you think of what happened in Germany in the 30s, it seems sort of normal to some people. They think, well, this is reality. But to other people, they say, this is madness. How is this happening? That's how I feel about this. That's why the film is so important.
We are drowning in hysteria. It's a very sad period in American life. The irony is, it is almost heaven for most Americans at this time. It is unprecedented. Peace, prosperity, opportunity. It is so good life. I have an equation you will like, and that is C secularism plus affluence equals boredom. And the bored do a lot of damage.
Oh, I mean, we've seen this through history. I mean, it's obvious. It, you know, it reminds us of Marie Antoinette, you know, playing shepherdess. I mean, when you really have everything, you kind of crack up and you go back to childhood. There's no, I mean, if bullets are flying over your head, it's much easier to be focused on what's real. But if you have everything handed to you, and this is, we know this is the downside of prosperity and why we need to teach our kids, especially what is freedom? What is the price of freedom? What is the price that has been paid for freedom? We've not been doing that for 50 years, as you say on your radio program every day. And as I say, every chance I get, and here we are. How did you get Adam Carolla involved in this? The comedian Adam Carolla.
Well, this is a match made in heaven, despite the fact that he's an atheist. He is a kindred spirit. You would adore him. Yeah, because he thinks as we do. And we, of course, have profoundly religious grounding. He has none. But he has something that brings us to very similar conclusions, and that is common sense. And that's what he always says. Do you believe Dennis Prager and I are so close? And the backgrounds, which, by the way, are hilariously offered, in the movie. I mean, people will also laugh. It is, I want to emphasize, a great movie.
Now, the film also features Jordan Peterson. The only time I ever met Jordan Peterson was with you at one of your Prager University events. No academic speaks better on this subject that I can think of than Jordan Peterson.
Well, Jordan Peterson is one of the special people living, in my opinion. That's comes from my heart and my mind. He is a searcher. He is courageous. See, you have, and I'll acknowledge I have and he has, unfortunately, and it's not self-praise. I'm very realistic about myself and about others. But we have what is the rarest of the good traits, courage. Jordan is an astonishing person. It all started because the province of Ontario, he's a professor at the University of Toronto, said there's a law. You must use the pronoun that somebody wants you to use. And he said, I will always be courteous to someone, but I will not be told by the government what
exactly
pronouns I can use.
I want this whole story told. When we come back from the break, we've just got a couple of minutes left with Dennis Prager. Folks, stick around. We'll be right back.
A part of the band in my Monster Mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them bodies. I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
Hey, 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 hey.
It was a graveyard smash.
Bobby, Boris Pickett, and the Crypt Kicker 5, the Monster Mash. You know, we got to have some fun around Halloween, the satanic holiday that I don't celebrate. Hey, folks, we're talking to Dennis Prager. Dennis, you were just sharing in the film No Safe Spaces, which I'm begging my audience to go see this weekend and to drag by the scruff of their necks every young person. They will be blessed by seeing this film. But I want to ask you, you were talking about Jordan Peterson, who's in the film, and you said that he was told, he had by law, he's in Canada, to use certain pronouns, the transgender thing. And he said, look, I'm perfectly happy to be courteous to people, but the law, you think you're going to use the law to tell me how to behave? I refuse. And his entire career of late has been born out of that refusal.
Yes, he has affected millions of people, especially young people. And his message is terrific. It is one that it begins with make your own bed. This is
make your own bed. Oh, man. Yes.
Yes. You see, I always tell people, you'll like this, Eric. So the biggest difference, I went to religious Jewish school, a yeshiva, till I was 18. And I tell people the biggest difference between a religious Jewish, religious Christian education on the one hand and secular education is this. In the religious school, we are taught that the biggest problem in our life is us, is me. Dennis Prager is Dennis Prager's biggest problem. That's whereas in a secular school, you are taught that society is your biggest problem.
Right.
That's why his theme begins with make your own bed.
I mean, look, Adam Smith, I just had an author on this program. I guess it was yesterday. Ryan Patrick Hanley wrote a book on Adam Smith. He's like the top Adam Smith scholar probably in the world. And it's all about how Adam Smith talks about how we have to teach virtue, how freedom, economic freedom, every kind of freedom is useless unless we teach virtue. Now, you and I talk about this, but this is the last thing that anybody on the left is able to stomach, because to them, the idea of virtue is foul. It's somehow anti-libertinism, which they confuse with liberty. And that is exactly where we are. So you have to get an academic from Toronto to tell you to make your bed, because he's the only one who's willing to say it.
That's basically what it amounts to. By the way, you're right about the virtue, of course. It's worse now. Now virtues are considered white virtues, not universal, white.
Male virtues. Don't forget male. And don't forget cisgender.
Well, in this case, it was restricted to what? Good grammar. This is a professor. Good grammar is white grammar. So you cannot insist that students speak properly or write properly.
Dennis, it kills me that you don't have a little more time. When are you coming back to New York? When can I see you, my friend?
You invite me. I'm on the first plane.
Oh, my gosh. I've got some fun things for you. Let's talk offline for just a second, but I know you have to go. Folks, in hour two.
But thank you. People should go to nosafespaces.com, see where it's playing.
Yes.
When it's playing in their city, it's rolling out across the country.
Oh, this is the weekend.
And they will thank you for pushing it.
Nosafespaces.com, nosafespaces.com, nosafespaces.com. Folks, please, please, you'll see on my Facebook page, the picture is featured. You've got to check it out. America is at stake. Dennis Prager, thank you.
Thank you. Then you can monster mash.